Do not disturb. And somebody will call anyway.
All right, we'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. Chris, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Bruce.
Here.
Councilmember Biggs.
Here.
Councilmember Larraway.
Yes.
Council President McPherson.
Yes.
Mayor Steer.
Here. And if you'll join me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. First item, consideration to amend the agenda.
Yes. I would move we amend the agenda to add item 8A, which is an executive session under Idaho Code 74206F. And move item 4C2, resolution R86-2022, to be a business item labeled as 7A.
Second.
All right. Motion is made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? And that motion carries. Next item is the consent agenda.
Nothing? Okay. I would move we approve the consent agenda as amended.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda as amended. Any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Bruce.
Aye.
Councilmember Biggs.
Yes.
Councilmember Larraway.
Yes.
Council President McPherson.
Yes.
And that motion carries. Next item, we need to have an executive session, and we'll need a motion for that, of course, but we will adjourn to the conference room so that the audience doesn't have to relocate.
I would move we adjourn to executive session under Idaho Code 74206D.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded, and we'll need Doug and Mark, and anybody else?
Morgan.
Okay. Motion's made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. We'll try to make this quickly. Go ahead and call this meeting back to order. We need a motion to adjourn from executive session.
I would move we adjourn from executive session.
We have a second?
Second.
Motion's made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And that motion carries. All right, public hearings, comprehensive plan amendment, future land use map. The City of Tuna requests consideration from City Council for an amendment to the comprehensive plan future land use map. Doug Hansen.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. For the record, Doug Hansen, Cuna Planning and Zoning, 751 West 4th Street, Cuna, Idaho. The City requests consideration for an amendment to the comprehensive plan future land use map. The future land use map is intended to carry out the goals of the comprehensive plan by designating land uses that will enhance the city by shaping and managing both the built and undeveloped environment, preserving existing land uses, and implementing a strong community design that will meet the demands of the citizens, public infrastructure, and services. The proposed future land use map previously reviewed by this council has been updated to reflect the greater need of industrial designated property per Exhibit 2.18, page 132 of the overall packet from the City of Cuna Economic Development Director. The future land use map now proposes a total of approximately 5,907 acres of industrial designated property, an increase of 2,048 acres from the previous proposal. I will stand by for questions.
Okay, questions for Doug.
No.
I had to control delete it. I had to control delete it to kill the whole thing, and then I just went back in.
And yours doing the same thing.
Kill it and go back into it. Control up delete. The alt button there. Hold control alt and delete. Wait for just a second. There go task manager. Yep. And then give it a second. Adobe will pop up there. Well, I say not responding. Actually, I think it's already closed. Yep, you're good. Go ahead and close that. And then go into your...
This one here?
The next one. Yep. And then your agenda's up there. Top. The files are just massive.
Yeah, trying to download them.
Yep.
All right. This is a public hearing. I only had one person sign up to testify. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify in the comprehensive plan amendment that didn't get a chance to sign in? Okay. All right. With that, we'll go ahead and open the public hearing. Cindy Giesen, would you like to step up to the mic? And
good evening, Mayor and City Council members. My name is Cindy Giesen. I'm at 1363 South Ash Avenue, Gunah, Idaho. And I have a concern about what I'm seeing on the plan. In December 2021, you brought all the community together to give their inputs. And at that time, it was being proposed that there'd be 1,207 reduction in the industrial area. Okay, and now, as of September, and as of the planning and zoning meeting on this issue, it's increased by, I believe the math is 2,088. And in my responses in December 2021, I was concerned about the manufacturing 1 and 2 industrial zone information. It lacked. There's nothing in the city codes or ordinances that addresses this data center type industrial use, the new uses of the land. And so a good example was in 2015, the community solar panels were coming in, and the community wanted you to do an environmental impact report, and that wasn't done. It was rushed through. The same with what's happening right now. You chose to do a business meeting instead of a public hearing in planning and zoning, so nobody had any inputs on what's going to happen with the data center. And we should have environmental impacts done. And I've searched, and I don't see any done. I've talked to many departments. I've even looked at the developers, and I don't see any plans. So I would like the codes up to date before you allow any more industrial use. And your planning and zoning, your economic development director had to point this out, that there's 1,500-plus more acres now, and you should include them because she's concerned about the infrastructure in her urban development plan. So I feel like we need to take a lot closer look at how we're going to treat our industrial land than not allowing public comment and not having any kind of environmental impact considerations in your codes for CUNA. And I don't feel the people were fairly treated, because you increased that land without any notification. in September 22. That's what I have to say.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions for?
No.
Okay. All right. And again, there was only one person signed up. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify that didn't get a chance? All right, seeing none. Doug, did you want to address any of that about the impact studies?
Yeah, so for the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning. Currently, there in our land use table, KCC 532, there are a list of industrial type uses that are permitted in the industrial zones, be that M1 light industrial manufacturing or M2 light industrial or M2 heavy industrial manufacturing. Data centers are a use that are permitted under that zoning. When the property, at least for Meta, for example, came in, they were required to annex that property with an industrial zone. Upon annexation, they are permitted through a design review, which is a public meeting item, to bring forth a design review for a data center. Public comments on items such as that would come forward at the time for public hearings, so annexations, plats, rezones. That item had already happened. The land was entitled as an industrial piece of property. And as our current CUNA City Code is written, data centers are permitted in an M1 light industrial manufacturing zone.
And then would the type of use, would that be what prompts any environmental impact? I mean, it's I suppose only if they go with issues with DEQ and things like that would be the time that would be prompted. Is that correct?
I think Paul may be better at answering that question with me. DEQ will provide us comments not on a case-by-case basis, but best practices. Depending on the size and scale of a development, that's when it would trigger. At the actual building phase of the site would mostly trigger the DEQ review. Planning and zoning doesn't see that as much.
Okay. Further questions?
So, if I'm not mistaken, I think she's asking, we did a review, an environmental impact study of what was already there. Now we're going to add how many more acres. I think she's asking, do we do a whole study for?
For the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning, I do not believe we did an environmental impact study for what
amount.
Was already there.
No, oh, you did?
No.
Right, Doug, that because it's already covered by city code is the reason why we didn't.
So the city itself wouldn't, depending on the project, we wouldn't require an environmental impact study. Generally, environmental impact studies are done on a federal level for federal projects because they have a different set of standards than the city does have. For instance, if it was a large-scale federal project that required federal funding to be built to federal standards, then yes, you would be required to do an environmental impact analysis, which would lead to an environmental impact study, things of that nature. But generally at the city level, we're not directly involved with environmental impact studies.
Okay, thank you. Further question?
Chris, you look like you're deep in thought about something.
I think the issue with if the federal government says it's okay, then we're good. I think as a city, we should probably look in. Wouldn't we want to have those studies done in general? We live here. Is that something that we don't typically do, or are we that we don't request? We don't.
Well, no, I don't think that we usually ask businesses to to do that, and I don't think we generally do that unless it gets to be, you know, if there was a manufacturer that was going to be building batteries or, you know, things like that that might have a harmful impact on the environment. I don't know what would actually prompt that.
Okay. For the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning, an environmental impact study is something that's triggered. It's not something that you would do before the fact based on the price, the scale, the size and scope of something that would trigger an environmental impact study. We couldn't simply go out and perform an environmental impact study in an industrial area because we also don't necessarily know what the uses are going to be there.
That's what I understand. Yeah. So once someone came and said, hey, we want to put this here, that's when it would trigger the...
And that would depend on, like, federal standards, the Department of Environmental Quality, things like that.
Okay.
Not by simply designating it as... Okay.
Yep, correct.
That makes sense. But if we... Yeah, toxic waste dump comes here and it's going to affect the water table, yes, we would definitely ask for an impact study.
I don't have any other questions, Greg.
Okay, thanks. Okay, then if we are done with questions, I would move we close the evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to close the presentation and proceed to deliberation. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries.
What's everyone's thoughts? I mean, it's basic adjustment to the map, and everyone's taking a lot of notes, so something's happening.
I'm just, it's a lot to remember.
Gotcha. Okay. I think it's a simple adjustments to the numbers and maps. And
it's something I'd like to research more, but I agree. I understand what he's saying.
Right.
You don't know what's going to be out there until they...
Until an occupant or a petitioner wants to move in. Then it becomes an issue, or it could be an issue.
Right.
I definitely understand that.
Okay.
But the map can change, too.
Sure.
Again, next year. It's just a map.
Okay. Then I would move that we... approve the comprehensive plan amendment.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve the comprehensive plan amendment and future land use map. Correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. That takes us to item B, consideration to approve case number 2201AN, annexation, 2201 PUD, planned unit development, 2201-S, preliminary plat, 22-1DA, development agreement for Patagonia East. Troy.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. For the record, Troy Behunin, Senior Planner, 751 West 4th Street here in CUNA, CUNA Planning and Zoning Department. The applicant requests approval for annexation, a planned unit development, preliminary plat, and also a development agreement. The request for annexation into CUNA City includes approximately 175.07 acres using the R4, R6, and R8 zones. The subject site will be subdivided into 561 single-family buildable lots, 53 common lots, and will also divide off a 10-acre school lot for the CUNA School District. Per the city engineer's memo, the applicant shall design and construct a pressurized irrigation pump and pond to serve the development. Public Works can support approval of the applicant contingent that the 18-inch Danskin force main project is complete. The applicant proposes 12.13 acres of usable open space, which includes a 9.80-acre school site, creating a total of 12.62% usable open space for the project. A development agreement accompanies this application, and this is in your packet for your review and or discussion tonight. The development agreement has been reviewed by the city's legal counsel and also by the applicant's legal team. Staff has determined that the application generally complies with the goals and the policies for the city of CUNA, Title V and Title VI of the CUNA City Code, Idaho State Statutes 50-222 and 676511, and the comprehensive plan as well. Staff recommends that if the City Council approves the annexation, the plan unit development, the preliminary plat, and the development agreement, that the applicant be subject to the conditions of approval listed in Section 10 of staff's memo, as well as any other conditions that the Council sees fit. The applicant is present tonight and has a presentation for the Council, and I will sit or stand for any questions you might have.
Okay, questions for Troy.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Troy, under the 16.59% open space, does that include the school?
Yes, that would include the school site, yes.
I will ask the applicant the next question. But another thing I might ask here is, it says the Danskin lift station does not currently have capacity. What's going to change?
For the record, Troy Behunin, that's a good question, Councilmember Laraway. The Danskin Force Main is actually going to be upgraded in the first few months of the next year of 2023. That will be a game changer for this area. It will provide the necessary sewer connections for the project, and the council has already decided on a resolution. So for that construction project.
Is that upgraded done by the developer or by the city?
Yeah, that would be a question for Paul on percentages, but I believe it's a team effort. But the developer is contributing.
It's a team effort, but give me a percentage then.
Councilman Laraway, this is Paul Stevens, city engineer. The 18-inch Danskin Force Main will produce approximately 3,500 additional sewer connections. All the 3,500, West Park, we're reserving 524 for West Park because they are financing the project. So that is probably about 11%.
Okay, thank you. Sure.
Okay. Anything further for Troy? All right, if the applicant would like to...
Oh, I'm sorry. I do have one question. So we count the open space for the school lot. Has the school district accepted that? Is it the size they need? And if so, when would it be developed into anything usable for open space? I mean, they could give them the lot. Right, and the school could say, great, thanks, we own it, but it could be weeds and storage like it currently is for the next 20 years, you know what I mean, until a bond is set and they could build in that area. So really it's not viable, usable space right now. I mean, I don't know when this project would be built out and whatever, so maybe it would all line up, but to me that's not opening open space right now.
That's a good question. For the record, Troy Behunin. So this is a phased project. This is going to be built over many years. So with a typical project, there are open spaces that are available for the residents to use, they may be in phase 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10. This is on the south. The school site is on the south side of Hubbard Road. Thank you, and east of Locust Grove. So, it's likely that the reservation is going to kick in immediately. But that those are probably questions for the school district to answer. But it would follow the, I guess, the pattern. Yes, the public wouldn't be able to use it right away. However, they're also not able to use in any other subdivision, they're not able to use a common lot that's in phase 7 or 8 in those subdivisions either. It's counted as open space up front, even though it's not built up front. Now, timing of the school, you'll have to ask the school district. I do know that the applicant and school district have come to an agreement, or at least they've had discussions about it. I don't know what the agreement is, but they have had ongoing discussions about this, and the last I heard was that there was an agreement.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Anything further?
Actually, I had a question. It says the pond and the lift station. Does it have a certain phase that goes in? Do you know what? Are we putting in phase 1? Or is it going to be toward the end? Or do we have an agreement that says they'll do it even if they decide to stop building? So it's not 3/4 of the way done, and then we don't have the sewer, the pond or lift station. We're just...
This pool, city engineer, no clue. I don't remember. If it's just part of the overall thing, I don't know which phase it will be in. But they will do it, and it's part of, once they agree to do all this, then I believe it is in the development agreement, and they have been historically responsible, and they have built a pond and a pump station for irrigation in Patagonia, the current Patagonia, and they've been reliable in that case.
And not to say that they wouldn't, but with the way that the market is now, right, I wouldn't want to allocate it to it and then it never come to fruition or be a decade out.
Absolutely, and that I think you probably can have questions for West Park when they make their presentation in a few minutes.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, anything further? All right, would the applicant like to come up and answer all those questions?
No.
I'll try my best. I will defer some of those to Heath Clark, who's the counsel for the applicant. Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Bonnie Layton. I am with NV5. We're located at 690 South Industry Way in Meridian, Idaho. Suite 10, postal code is 83642. I'm here tonight on behalf of the applicant as a senior planner to discuss our request for approval of annexation, the planned unit development, special use permit, design review, and preliminary plat application. So thank you for your time this evening. I'll try to be brief. I know there's some questions, but we'll try to move along. As Troy had covered the main points of our application. If you could click to the next. Thank you. I put together just a brief presentation. I don't know, can we zoom? Let's see if we can zoom out here real quick. There we go. So as Troy mentioned, we are at the intersection of Hubbard Road and Locust Grove. So we've got, this project is actually a continuation of the existing Patagonia. There were some questions about the irrigation system. We would be connecting into that pressurized irrigation system in Patagonia to serve this as well. So we've got at the northwest corner of the intersection, the northeast corner, and then south, just off of the corner, south of Hubbard Road. So everything in blue that you see is part of the project that we are proposing this evening. Just as Troy mentioned, we're about approximately 170, almost 175 acres. We are proposing 561 residential units. I've listed the densities there and then open space. As I mentioned, I'll defer to Heath as well as to the school district on the arrangement for the school site, which is, my mouse is jumping around, which is right here, as part of our project. Let's see. There we go. And so one thing that I did want to reiterate is that this is part of the larger Patagonia project that is currently under construction. And to your question about open space and amenities and when those get developed, our residents in the new application that we're that we have before you this evening will have access into the amenities of this existing Patagonia site. We're also providing pathway connections. So it's really meant to just be actually kind of later phases of the current project that we already have under construction. Let's see. Just going through my notes. So in our request, what we are proposing this evening is a mix of lot sizes. We do have some alley loaded lots here as well as here, and that was precipitated the planned unit development request that we had. We are requesting that those lots be 38 feet wide with an increase from 40% to 55% lot coverage. We find that we do, and just these two areas here, which are internal to our project, sorry, my mouse keeps bouncing around, would be the R8 zone that we had requested. Surrounding that would be an R6 zone in this area, as well as the majority of the project south of Hubbard, and then an R4 zone up in our northeast quadrant, where you can see we actually have some fairly sizable lots. I think some of you may remember that this project had been brought before you a couple of years ago, and at that time there were some significant concerns and questions about the sewer serviceability. We have spent the last couple of years working with staff and coming up with a plan to make that happen. And as Troy mentioned in his report, Heath has gone through that with the city's legal counsel and our client and staff at Public Works to work out how that development would take place for the project. So we feel we've come a long way in the last 2 years and have done a lot of work to make this project come to fruition. And so with that, I can stand for any questions or maybe quickly turn it over to Heath if you have some of the more technical questions on the contracts between the school district and also with the city for the sewer.
Okay, questions for Monty Layton.
Like President McPherson asked about the school property, is there some stipulation that says the school can't control what they can't control? So if, say, 10 years down the road, is there anything that says that land gets reverted back to you? Or is that going to be an eyesore for landscaping?
I will let Heath explain that all to you.
Under the bush,
very
you
great
know.
Question. Great question.
Councilmember Larraway, Heath Clark, 251 East Front Street in Boise, representing the applicant. So that's actually a question that we thought about as well. And we had a number of conversations with Robbie and the CUNA School District. And so we have a school donation agreement that has been signed. And we talked about that specific scenario. So the first, I think, point to consider about this is just the timing for when the services would be delivered to the site to allow the school district to go. So we have committed to have the school district or the utilities there no later than 5 years. That's what's in the agreement. That could be moved up through the conversations with the school district. With regard to your question about greening it up, we had the same concern. We wanted to make sure that if a bond, heaven forbid, can't be passed, they can't build a school there, that it wouldn't turn into a weed patch. So we have a provision in the agreement that says that we can green that up as a temporary park, and to make sure that green space is available to the residents, and we would work with CUNA School District to make sure that whatever we do doesn't interfere with their plans. So I think we've accommodated for that pretty well in the agreement. And then the agreement does include a use restriction, so it would be the school would be the owner. They would be using it for school purposes. If an elementary school, for example, doesn't go in, they could also use it for school office purposes. But it's my understanding in talking to the school that that's a high priority site, so I expect that that would go sooner rather than later, and we're all going to do what we can to help promote bonds out here in the city because we all understand how important that is.
How many acres is that?
10.28 acres.
So that's an elementary school?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem. And maybe just to preempt some other questions about the sewer agreement, Bonnie mentioned that we'd been at this for a little while. So the last time this application was up was November, December of 2020, and the sewer was the main concern. So we've since worked on that with another partner. We've had a number of conversations with Paul and with city administration to make sure we had an arrangement sorted out. So the city council has and has reviewed and has approved a pre-construction agreement, which was the first step that included basically the pathway forward, all the work that we needed to do, the plan production, the bid production, all of that. The next step was a reimbursement agreement, which the council reviewed within the last couple of months and was just amended a couple weeks ago. That approves the bids, approves the plans, and it just basically says, off you go. So the last step, we've already signed a construction contract with Tappany and with a substantial completion date of April of 2023. The last step in all of this would be for us to issue a notice to proceed to Tappany, which we would do if we're fortunate enough to get an approval. We'd be doing that here in the next few days because we want to get that going. One other thing I would mention to add to that, there was a question about what if they don't do it, and I wasn't sure if that was on the irrigation facilities or on the sewer main.
It's the sewer.
Okay, on the sewer main, you have a condition of approval 10.2 that says that we have to show that there is capacity in the sewer lines before folks would sign off on our plats. So we can't go if the sewer doesn't go.
Okay, any further questions?
So I was just reading the ACHD traffic study, which was done in 2018, mm-hmm. looks like. Things have changed around here a lot since 2018, and they did recommend another study to be done before plats were. I just don't know if that's been ordered yet, because one thing that concerns me is this is a 10-year project, and the increase in capacity to the roads looks like isn't going to start until 2036. Mm-hmm. A traffic circle, and especially with a potential school being close by. I just wonder if that's gone back to ACHD for another study or an impact analysis since, because major growth has happened probably in the last 2 years, you know, that wasn't anticipated.
Sure. Councilmember Biggs, there was an ACHD review and approval back when I mentioned that this project came before this council a couple of years ago. This was submitted to ACHD again in the normal course. Their recommendations didn't change except for one. What they had recommended a couple of years ago was that we do a new traffic impact study to kind of prove out how things are going by, I think it was the 202nd lot. Because of the growth in the area, they've asked that be moved up to the 101st lot. And so that's a pretty early threshold for this type of a project to be coming back for a traffic study at only 100 units. And so we expect we will be doing that at that point. That would identify if there's any other mitigation that's going to be required that it hasn't been identified on the capital improvements plan. In the meantime, where improvements are not going in that are against our property, we are reserving right-of-way so that they can go in once they're warranted. So that would include the roundabout. So we're going to be dedicating the right-of-way for that, even though it's not ready to go in at this point.
I don't know who this would be the best question to ask. How many units are R4 and how many units are R6?
I'm going to give that to the more attractive of the two here.
Because I don't see any percentages or anything for the lots other than 57 acres.
I apologize. I left my readers at home. Can I respond to that on rebuttal, maybe after? That way I can dig those out. Let's see.
Maybe answer.
They are on the drawings.
Maybe I've answered my own question. If I look at it, you can agree with me or not. You have 8.8 acres at R8, and you have 109 acres at R6, and 59 acres at R4.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are they all included in the same phases? Each of the like the R4 lots and the R6s and the R8s?
Mr. Mayor, Councilman Biggs, we submitted a preliminary phasing plan, and that would be in our preliminary plat documents. And so we've got a kind of a mixture of lots. So if you look, phase one would start in the northwest corner of our of the intersection, and that would encompass half of those alley loads. Would be in that first phase. And then I'm not sure if you've got that this drawing in front of you.
Oh, yeah. I was reading part of the phasing plan, too.
Yeah. And so so we try to bring on a little bit of a mix of housing options with the phases when we've got the ability to do that.
For the record, Troy Buchanan, there is a phasing plan in your packet. It's Exhibit 2.17 on page 80 of the packet.
Okay. Anything further? All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
All right. This is a public hearing. Signed up. Is there anybody who wanted to testify in this matter who didn't get a chance to sign in? Okay. I'll start with Robbie Reno, if you would state your name and address for the record.
Robbie Reno, Kenneth School District, 711 East Porter Street, Kuna, Idaho. Mayor Sear, honorable members of the council. West Park Company and Mr. Merrill have been very collaborative and very generous in this. If you remember back when they brought this back, they wanted us to pay half, and they donated the other half. They've come back this time and given us the full 10 acres. Which is a perfect site for an elementary. An elementary is 10 acres. Middle school, junior high is 40 acres. And high school is 60. So this fits right in. This Thursday, we finalize our 10-year capital plan. Preliminary within that capital plan, we will need six elementary schools within the next 10 years. Currently, we have two after this. We have two designated sites for those elementary schools. We have three pending. So this fits right in line with our capital plan. And if you look on ones that are connectivity, sites that we have that are available to connect to water, sewer, power, all the city utilities. This is the third on the list as far as the pieces of land that we own. Again, Mr. Merrill has been very good at the requests that we've made. And if you look, too, there's an option to add a bus lane on one of the little parkways there to add access like we have in Crimson Point to relieve traffic in the subdivisions. We know elementary traffic is not very pleasant for those patrons. We anticipate this project to bring around 356 students with just this project, and with Patagonia there already with 140 elementary kids right now in that subdivision, it'll fit nice in this spot. And like he said in the agreement, we don't want eyesores either, but we can't afford to upgrade them either. But we will work with them and go, and we are relying on the bond. Again, this is all contingent on if a bond passes through our 10-year plan to make things happen. But I stand for any questions.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Reno?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. You got off easy. Thank you. Joe Randall.
Hi, my name is Joe Randall. I live next to this project. I'd just like to say that I have watched this Patagonia be developed. They've done an outstanding job. It's a quality subdivision. They have two pools. They have parks. They have walking path. And to me, it's just a great, great subdivision. And they say that it will continue on with the same, same quality. And since I live right near there, or it'll be surrounding me, I can't think of having a better partner to live by. I had some minor problems, and they have worked with me to resolve those, and so I can't think of a better subdivision to be a neighbor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ken Jantz.
Now, I'm fairly neutral on this project, but one of the things that I came to this committee back in August, and I'm concerned about traffic speeds. There's a hill about a quarter mile south of Columbia Road, and there's eight driveways that are in that area, and I talked to you about that then. I wanted to make sure that we're following through on getting the traffic slowed down and getting them to quit passing on double yellow lines, and because this subdivision is going to put a lot of stress on South Locust Grove Road. Generally speaking, I don't have, as I said, I'm neutral on the project, and but I am darn concerned about the speed of the traffic. It used to be an old, you know, two-lane road that was gravel, and interestingly enough, I still own half part of the road, so I'd like to see them slow down before I get run over. Thank you.
Good. And to address that a little bit, I'd just like to say we have most recently put on two patrol officers, which we hadn't had before, and so their job is traffic and traffic calming and that type of thing. And although they just started, it seems that they've been very successful in their efforts. So we continue to expand on that. And I appreciate it.
And the speed limits are dropping.
Yeah.
I remember right when the original Patagonia subdivision went in, it went from 50 down to, was it 40 or 45?
On 145.
Yeah, they kicked it down.
Mm. Yeah. So ACHD will lower the speed limit automatically when they start developing.
Yeah. The other issue, and you guys brought this up at the last meeting that this was discussed, I'm concerned about the Stevens Lateral. It provides water for about 30 acres of our property. And how does a developer plan to move that water through that area? It borders Randall's property, but we're within about, you know, 40 feet of it, where the access is to Mr. Randall's property off of South Locust Grove. And that's one of the things that's causing an issue with traffic, is going over that canal. And if they plan to bury that canal, or what do they intend to do with it?
Well, they are required to make delivery available on irrigation. They can't interfere with that. So it is possible they might. I don't know what they plan on doing, but it's possible they could put a pipe in or whatever that is. But they do have to deliver that water. So.
Do we need his name and address for the record? I don't think he stated it.
What's that?
He didn't state his name and address when he started.
Mr. Jantz. Oh. I don't think he added his address.
Yeah. Yes, that last statement was from Ken Jantz.
Okay.
And I didn't have anybody else sign up. Is there anybody who wishes to? All right, that's all we had on the sign-up sheets. And so if you want to have further questions, we'll leave the hearing open until you get through with questions with staff or whoever.
I have a question. Paul, are we only allocating EDUs to this first phase with this vote?
Pool city engineer. In this case, it was a negotiated number because they are sponsoring the project. So, no, it's 500. They have 524 EDUs allocated to them based on the development agreement for the force main in 10 Mile.
And they have how many years to complete it?
They don't have a time limit on, I don't think. That would be on their project, not on the force main. The force main does have a drop dead date.
I don't have any further questions.
Okay.
I have a question for the, probably you, ma'am, but. And it has no bearing on my decision in this, but are you going to use the same builder teams that did the original Patagonia and the multiple phases of it?
Mr. Mayor, Councilman McPherson, yes, that is our intent to use the same builder teams.
Okay.
As part of good. This project.
They've done good work in there, so. That's all I have. Matt?
Okay. Thank you.
Again, I want to thank you this evening for your time. We are in agreement with the conditions of approval that staff has outlined, and for the record, would appreciate the approval of this project this evening. So thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. I'm glad you just stepped up and said that because I almost forgot to let you have your time at the end. Doesn't hurt to keep me in line. And that was Bonnie Layton, in case we didn't get her name.
Okay, well, if there's no more testimony, then I would move we close the public hearing.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Motion's made and seconded to close the public hearing. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? And that motion carries.
Well, were you around when this came through last time? Okay.
Yeah, I'm sitting over there.
Okay, couldn't remember. You know, it's worlds of difference from last time to this time. You know, they've got a good cooperation with the school district. Sewer was obviously the issue. They've solved that to an extent. I know speed is the factor out there. I work in that area quite often, and the traffic has went crazy out there in the mornings and evenings, and even some during the day, but I have complete faith in our police department for patrolling that area and keeping them in check, so I don't see any reason to slow this up again.
Yeah, the last time I was here, I think the sewage was the biggest problem we had, where the lift station was, but I think it's big kudos to them to get that school out there. Because we have no schools on that side of Highway 69, and I think that's the door opener to when we'll start to get better growth out that direction. So the school property is really good. I'm glad that worked out for the school. I think, you know, like every subdivision we do, we're always going to have a traffic problem. You know, it takes a while for ACHD to catch up, but they do eventually do it. Yeah, and this is a big difference from what it was last time.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the only thing I think about is, you know, allocating all those EDUs with no time limit. That's kind of what got us, what we've been discussing in Public Works for a while now is they can kind of take as long as they want. Not that they would want to, but we're just stuck with that access to it. The other thing is, even though they are donating land, I mean, that's great. I love the fact of that, but it doesn't eat. We still have no idea when they would put a school there,
right,
with a bond that's required with 66%. And also the capacity that we deal with now at the school district. Those are my only concerns.
Okay.
I think I can echo his concerns. And then, of course, my traffic concern when I brought up. But.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then I would move we approve case number 22-01 AN, 2201 PUD, and 2201 S, 2201 DA, with the conditions listed in the packet.
No second.
Motion is made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
And we have that motion carries. Item C, consideration to approve case number 2205-S, Falcon Crest LLC and M2 ID Falcon Crest LLC, request preliminary plat approval. Troy.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. For the record, Troy B. Hunan, Senior Planner, CUNA Planning and Zoning Staff, 751 West 4th Street here in CUNA. The application before you this evening is a request for preliminary plat approval in order to subdivide approximately 41 acres into 184 total lots, broken down to 172 single-family lots, 9 common lots, and 2 common driveways. The applicant proposes 5.17 acres or 12.7% of the project as open space, and the gross density is proposed to be 4.2 dwelling units per acre. The net density is proposed at 5.72 dwelling units per acre. Public Works does conditionally support the Falcon Crest South subdivision development with the conditions of that support listed in Section 5 of the engineer's memo attached to this packet. The Planning and Zoning Department agrees with the Public Works recommendation. Commission did recommend a small change listed in Section 9 of the staff memo. It's just changing a little bit of verbiage there. The applicant proposes 2 private driveways for a cluster of 3 lots within the project. Staff has recommended that the applicant be conditioned to work with the city engineer for proper easement widths for the project as a whole, and in particular, the clustered homes served by these private driveways. Staff has reviewed the proposed preliminary plat for technical compliance with the CUNA City Code, with Title 5 and 6 of CUNA City Code, specifically Idaho State Statute 676511 and the CUNA Comprehensive Plan, and also the Recorded Development Agreement for the project. And if the council should approve the preliminary plat, staff recommends the applicant be subject to the proposed recommended conditions outlined in Sections 9 and 10 of the staff memo. The applicant is here tonight. They do have a small presentation, and I will stand for any questions or sit.
Okay, questions for Troy?
I have none.
Okay, and who do we have from staff? You may have the floor, sir.
Good evening. My name is Mark Tate, for the record, 1673 West Shoreline Drive, Suite 200, Boise, Idaho, 83702. Let's see if I can adjust some, see what Bonnie was talking about with the mouse here. I think I want something flat. There we go. Or smooth. Okay. There we go. All right. So just a quick overview on the Falcon Crest project. I know many of you have seen this project a number of times, and I'll just keep saying that we'll keep seeing you every couple times every year as the project goes by. It is a master plan community, the Falcon Crest Golf Course. I think I've discussed, you know, the project overall, the Valor name, for those of you new on the council. And we do have Veterans Day coming up. A lot of the reason behind the Valor community name has to do with the history of the project. Back in 2001, the original golf course developer's son enlisted into the military. He was killed in Iraq and received the Silver Star for his actions, saving an entire forward operating base from a suicide bomber, giving his life in the process. So we're continuing on with the celebration of that kind of theme through the community. So you will see that continuing on as we develop the project. The area that you see on this master plan in the yellow is the trilogy portion of Valor, which is the 55 and older portion of the community. That area is roughly 1,000 residential units. To the north of that, we've got the Reveille community, which surrounds the short golf course there that we've just rebuilt and will reopen here in the spring. It's looking incredible. All the landscaping is getting redone along that entry road, which was just rebuilt along with that roundabout. The model homes for that Reveille area are now under construction, which we're very excited about. You'll see homes going in along that golf course here pretty soon as well. What we're talking about tonight is part of the trilogy community at Valor. The preliminary plat itself includes around 180 residential units. About half of those units were actually in a previous preliminary plat, the very first preliminary plat for the project. And the reason that we are re-preliminary platting that portion of the project is that we went in and modified the 5th, 6th, and 7th holes on the Freedom Golf Course. So Freedom number 4, which is the one on the south side of the entry there with the four ponds that you see there, 5 used to be a par 5 that was like 700 and something yards long from the back tees, which is just ridiculous if you're a golfer. So we modified the holes there. We've actually got landscaping in, greens in, tee boxes, and we're really excited to see that progress. The lake that you see next to the club site, which is labeled as the C there, is in. There's water in that now. That was dug about 20 feet deep in solid basalt, which was quite a process and probably not the smartest thing we've ever done, but looks really cool, so we like it. Portion of the project in the red down there, like I said, it's about 180 residential units. It gets us to the second entry. Actually, it's the third entry for the trilogy area. The entry on the Cloverdale roadside is in. The entry to the north is in. And so this will bring us over to our third entry there off of Cuna Road. And as I mentioned before, all of these units are 55 and older and age restricted. I know Robbie is here, and we've talked about this at planning and zoning, that this isn't a situation where there's going to be any children in the homes. I put this presentation together quite a while now. It should have real life pictures as we've gotten so far along with the landscaping, but we still show some renderings here. That mound is there. The footings for that sign are in. Sidewalks are in. And irrigation lines are being run to this area. This is the main entry to the golf course there. Those walls are going in right now as we speak as well, with all the landscaping rebuilt and those medians and grass on the sides. This roundabout is now constructed. The flagpoles are in. They're not in a triangle formation. They're in a straight line, so there's a little bit different there, but other than that, we're looking pretty good. This is the preliminary plat for the area that we're discussing and a landscape plan. And Troy touched on this, there was a couple of minor modifications at planning and zoning. One of the recommendations that Troy had was to continue the landscape and pathway all the way to Cuna Road, which we've added and agreed with. One of the other conditions was to add a street stub to the west, which is the commercial site. And just given that this is a gated community and 55 and older, P&Z was fine with the pathway connections and overall connectivity in the area, with that. This does have quite a lot of open space in the community with another park node in that area. As you come into the project, that little roundabout that you see, we actually changed it to a T configuration, and that tees right into the T boxes of hole number six in there, so kind of a cool entry as you come into the project. This is the guardhouse as you come in. I believe they call it a welcome center. Maybe guardhouse doesn't sound quite as friendly. I call it a guardhouse. The clubhouse, you might have seen some of the news stories recently. They had some nice media about some of the grand opening of the model homes there. The club site is under construction. The parking lot's in. Like I said, the pond on the south side is in. They're working on the site improvements, and I believe the buildings are coming any day now. So pretty excited about that. This is some of the renderings of the club at Valor. And this is also part of the 55 and older community there between the two ponds. So I think that's all I had for you. One other just quick comment that was discussed at planning and zoning had to do with some of the utility services, and we're still continuing to work with the city on timing of upgrades, and that was addressed at planning and zoning as well. So with that, I'd stand for any questions.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Tate?
No, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, this is a public hearing. Is there anybody who wishes to testify who didn't get a chance to sign in? Okay. We will start with Pat Pauley.
Evening. My name is Dr. Patrick Pauley, and 12643 South Sonora Road. So they mentioned that it's 55 and over, no children, and that's okay. I put myself down as being neutral because being realistic individual, being opposed to the project is likely not going to change it. But I do have one massive aversion to it, and that's the access off Kenner Road. Because I do have kids that can throw a rock from my front yard to that access point, and we're 200 and some odd residences in Desert View. Have been there. I've been there since 1996, and we do have some kids that are coming and going, and the increased amount of traffic would not be a beneficial thing to our community that's longstanding. And I don't think it's unreasonable that egress and ingress to this should be off of Cloverdale from the west or from their existing access points coming down from the north. I just don't see that as being a problem. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
James Simpson, did you wish to testify? You didn't check the box.
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Robbie Reno.
Robbie Reno, Cuna School District, 711 East 1st Street. We'd like to rescind our comment because I didn't realize it was about the 55 and older. It was unclear in the agenda if it was the non-55 and older, so we want to just cancel our comments for tonight. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Robbie.
All right, that's all I have signed up to testify. Was there anybody else who wishes a chance? Okay. Troy, so you had said earlier that this still conforms with the original development agreement. Does that include sewer connections and all of that, or has that number increased?
For the record, Troy Buchanan, senior planner. Right now, they are still on track and under their allotted, you know, what was approved originally with the development agreement. They haven't; they're not even close to reaching capacity with.
Okay.
With sewer connections.
All right, thank you.
Getting closer, though.
Troy, what was the difference between the original Falcon Crest pre-plat and the new one when it changed designation?
So that's a good question, Councilmember Biggs. For the record, Troy Buchanan. So it's more or less the arm. If we go back to the pre-plat. So realistically speaking, I can't see the. It's really, really jumpy. So that north arm of the subdivision on screen, it's more or less the top half, mostly focused on the northwest corner of this particular subdivision. The big changes are just lot layout and some street reconfiguration.
The original designation, sorry, I'm new. The original designation was not R12 for a lot of these units, right? It was all R8, R6.
The zoning is not changing at all, so it still conforms to the zone.
Okay.
But yes, there is some of it does have R12, and the majority of it is R6.
It looks like the overlay that I'm looking at, I'm not sure what phase this is in, it's off of Cuna Road, looks a little, I'm sure I'm looking at the right place here.
Cuna just behind the commercial.
It just looks like there's a lot more than there in the new plat than the original.
So is Mark, sorry for the record, Troy Buchanan.
So it's on
Cloverdale, isn't it?
Page 102 of 179 shows what he's talking about.
Maybe that's Cloverdale. Right here.
And I think that was the red square that was.
Oh, so this would be Cuna Road. This is the red square.
That's the commercial.
Okay, that's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's L on the color screen.
It just looked like there were quite a few more than the original plat.
So if you're looking at page 102, the dashed lines are the original approval.
Right.
The solid lines are the addition. So yes, naturally, since they're adding land, yes, there would be an increase in lots. So yes, you are correct.
An increase in traffic, but the sewage is all and water is
yeah.
Taken care of.
I mean, the development agreement and the ACHD traffic impact study that they've performed and the development agreement. It's all inclusive for the entire project. So the mayor is asking about that magic number, which is 2322. 2322. Right? Yeah? Okay. So yes, they're still under that.
However.
Thank you. I have a however. Mayor and Council, this is Paul, city engineer. And I think he's running out of time. As of right now, they have been approved for 602 lots, but the New York lift station in its current configuration can handle 484. So we have an appointment with Mark and his crew to chat about that next week, but that is right now they're over what we can handle with that. And that was supposed to be a 20-year build-out thing, and that's, they've gone a lot quicker than we intended or anyone thought we would go. So I think that needs to be brought up. And overall, they had the right in the development agreement to move their densities around, but the overall density had to stay roughly the same as development agreement. So it is truly all-encompassing, but there's some pieces and parts moving around that we need to be very careful about.
But as always, no building permits can be issued if there's not capacity, right?
Correct.
That's always the case.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
So like you said, the permits can't be issued if there's not capacity. Is it just a case-by-case basis? Or you said we couldn't service the whole area. If there are other areas that are still using that same sewer system, who looks at it and says there's no capacity for it now, or if there's another development there, are they just allocated first come, first serve?
That one, I'm assuming in this case there was a development agreement. Well, I know there was a development agreement. So whatever was specified in that original development agreement would dictate
who gets it?
Divvying up of PDUs that are available.
Mayor, this is Paul, city engineer. I believe that's correct. They are coming in with phases. We approve the phase as it comes in. And right now we're telling you that they're going to outrun the capacity of the New York lift station with this phase.
And do we already have a plan to upgrade that? Is there something you've already discussed?
We're working on that with them. We will meet with them next week to get the details worked out.
It does say the New York lift station pumps will have to be ordered before the next approval, any Falcon Crest subdivision phase. I don't know if that's holding them legally to the fire or not, but.
And the reason for the needing them to get ordered is these things are taking like a year to obtain. So that was the reason behind that.
Wow. I don't have anything further.
I don't know who would address it because we don't have an ACHD representative here, but the gentleman that spoke about the road entrance and the reason why, can somebody speak to that? I mean, I kind of know, but...
Mark probably has some background to that.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, that's that's a good question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Mark Tate again for the record. It was a good question by Dr. Pauly there. I'm going to go to the master plan to take a look at that. So first on just the trilogy portion of the community and the traffic question, there are four different entries into this trilogy community. So there is a main entry here on Cloverdale, which is in already. There's another entry that will be built on this collector road on the north side. And then this is the main entry up here as you come into the community. So from just a circulation standpoint in the community, we do actually want to direct most of our trips north onto this main collector road that goes east-west here. So most of the traffic, if you're living in this area, is going to come to the north. If you're in this area, it should go to the west or north. So there will be some trips down here for sure. But we are trying to, really internalize a lot of the trips from the community and really rely on this main collect a road here for most of the traffic to take it east-west there. And I will just add to the conversation about the lift station. There is, as Paul said, 484 total units of capacity. That's also based on a sort of average effluent produced by a house, which we know that 55 and older communities produce far less than your average house because it's empty nesters that live there. So it's a good conversation just to keep having. We know that we're going to continue development of the project over many, many years, and so we just want to make sure that we're planning for those utilities at the right time, and that's why we're in constant communication on that stuff. I think that's all I had.
And so they're not recommending any turn lines or deceleration lines to any of the entrances?
Not currently there. With this phase. We do have intersection improvements with that entry there. So I should say there are improvements to that intersection that will be made.
Because I think the concern would be addressed with a way to get on and off of the road, so deceleration lines and turn lines and that type of thing.
Right.
Excuse me, which road are you talking about? Kuna Road?
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
yes.
There are no deceleration and turn lines and whatnot.
No, they would have to be added.
And there is no intersection right now. It's a barbed wire fence.
Yeah, so part of the ACHD requirements will be to do, you know, full intersection improvements in that area to make sure that we're meeting the ACHD standards for the intersection there.
Well, I think with volumes. What the concern is that I think that there needs to be deceleration lines and turn lines installed at that type of an intersection, and that would address his concern for getting on and off of that roadway.
Right. Right.
And is that something that we're looking at doing?
I would have to look back at the ACHD report. They're the ones that look at the traffic counts to see if there needs to be a deceleration or an acceleration lane on there. I suspect there probably is, but I'd need to make sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I realize that there's nothing there now. I understand that. That's why I'm bringing up the point that if we're going to do that, they need to have those things in place.
Side, that's all
if you want to talk some more, you'll have to come up to the mic, if you would. But I understand your point, and that's why I was trying to address that here to make sure that we get that taken care of.
So the last study was completed in 2018 as well. Things have changed.
Our traffic study for this one was recent, was 2020.
I'll look at the executive.
Or 2021.
Okay.
So anyway, it says that.
On page 117.
Would it actually been 2021?
Okay.
The study shows that dedicated turn lanes are not warranted at access points A and B, which would be the one on Cloverdale and then the one to the south where that red is. Staff recommends that a dedicated eastbound left turn lane be constructed on Cuna Road at access point B, which is the south by the red there.
Which is B?
You're talking about L.
Right here. B over here.
Yeah.
So that's where they're saying they recommend a dedicated eastbound left turn lane be constructed on Cuna Road. So here to turn into there.
Yeah.
Okay, so
future growth.
So ACHD has already scheduled that in.
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
Well, if there is nothing further, I would move we close the evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation.
I'll second it.
Motion's made and seconded to close the evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries.
Well, I'll start off again. This developer and applicant have, you know, worked who knows how many hours with city staff and the engineering department and everything for the city to make all this click. They did change some of the plat, as was mentioned, and reconfigured it, whatever, but that happened in one of the previous ones where ACHD came back and said, you need to change this road, yada, yada, yada. So I think it's pretty straightforward. Not a huge impact on anything else, so I don't see any issue with it.
55-year-olds can't have kids.
I mean, I will, but...
I think I know a few, yeah.
I think they've done the work that they've asked them to do. I do. I don't know how Mr. Pauly gets his concerns addressed, right, with ACHD, or because he probably has neighbors as well. How would he go about? Is there just when an updated traffic study is done, he could put input there? I just don't want to leave him with.
Well, that's what I was talking about on the Cuna Road, the turn lanes and. And that
so he would
thing.
Need to
that
go
is,
put input
that
there.
Is addressed. It's already addressed in the traffic study that they did.
Okay, it was.
So it already
there's
requires
a left turn lane directly, actually directly almost north of this.
Right by his property.
Yeah. This Greyhawk.
Well, and I think one of his concerns was just don't put an entry point there, but I think that's per fire code and ACHD code.
Right.
That
yeah.
Number of houses on a certain size of plot, it has to be there, so. Unfortunately.
What's the speed limit on that road now?
I do not know that.
Do you know what it is, Chief?
Thank you.
And that's been called into the county multiple times.
Sir, you have to come to the mic and speak on the record, please.
Pardon?
You have to come to the mic and speak on the record, please. And if you'll identify yourself when you speak.
That way we have it on the record for you.
Okay, that's fine. Dr. Pauly again. There's been several times when my neighbor has called County SO because of excessive speed as it is. I believe it's, well, was it state unless otherwise posted as 25 miles an hour, right? Is that the driver's license test?
City streets.
Something along those lines, yeah. So, but that's, you know, an existing community there, and there's kids and school buses and...
Right.
You know, that's the issue. And as far as the fire code, that's an interesting topic considering we had a satellite fire station there that was manned at one time until some point, and then it wasn't. So then we're kind of floating out there, which is okay. We're not griping, but it's kind of interesting how fire code becomes a reason to go ahead and have an impact on a longstanding existing community, but fire code's not really an issue for that longstanding existing community.
Right. That's why I wanted to ask, because I wanted to make sure that.
Thank you. Okay.
Anything, John?
Yeah, I mean, I know there's concerns. First of all, I have to trust Paul. That he knows what these sewer hookups are going to, what they're going to do, and when they're going to happen, and when they're all lined up. That's why he's the boss. So I don't have any problem with that. Traffic, I know, is always an issue, and ACHD does come along and fix the problem a little bit. The speed limit, once these subdivisions start to go in, do drop. Are they going to drop enough for you? I don't know. They usually drop to about 35. with the egress lane and ingress lane that's being required by ACHD that's going to help traffic. But most of the traffic going in and out of Desert View, there really isn't that much on Kew Road, is there? I mean, that's just basically a one road.
There's two roads to access that.
Right. The other one's further south.
So if we're going to have discussions with people in the audience, we need to reopen the public hearing.
No more. No, we're good. But I know that the traffic situation is always an issue. I really don't have any complaints about what Falcon Crest has going here. I know that there's going to be some adjustment. I know ACHD has got some growing pains. So I really don't have any issue with what we got going here. I'm done.
I agree.
And I don't play golf, so I can't help you.
Well, I'm kind of curious how they're going to go from the 16th to the 17th green, but that's...
Don't buy a house, right?
Is there a condition on this with the EDUs? Is it going to be conditional?
Yeah, well, they've already allocated. He already addressed it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's listed in the packet.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we are ready to move forward with this, so I would move that we... let's see, we already closed it. I would move we approve case number 2205S. Is that all there is on that? With the conditions listed in the packet.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second for approval. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? And that motion carries. Next, we have consideration to approve ordinance 2022-34, Morgan Treasure, Economic Development Director.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. For the record, Morgan Treasure, Economic Development Director, City of CUNA. As you have known, and for a history lesson for our newer people, we have been working on the establishment of an East Urban Renewal District. Actually, the work began before I was in this role. It was started by Lisa Holland, and it was one of the projects I've picked up and continued to bring over the finish line. So we're here tonight in the final step of the process. It has come before you as a feasibility report, been workshopped throughout the summer, worked on it with property owners and other interested parties, and we're here before you now finally with the final plan. At this time, I would ask Megan Conrad from Elam and Burke to come up, and it looks like the presentation's loading right now. I am also going to conference call in Olivia Metz, who was the economist who prepared the economic feasibility study. So if you can bear with me for just a second while that's loading, I'm going to go and call Olivia on the phone and put her on speaker as well. Actually, it looks like Lisa's coming up first.
And did we have a sign-in sheet for this hearing? I don't have one here.
I did not make one. Bad on me. I don't normally have public hearings.
We can probably...
Do you want to run... Okay.
Fix this one?
Yes. Let's do that.
And add on it what it is and put it out there.
Hold on just a second. I'm going to dial Olivia.
Hello?
Hey, Olivia, it is Morgan. I have you on speakerphone here, and we're getting our presentation going right now.
Okay.
It's a sign-in sheet. We didn't have a sign-in sheet. People need to be able to sign in. So before we get too deep, is there anybody who wishes to testify in the matter of the urban renewal? She has the sheet there. Okay. All right. That's good for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Morgan.
Okay, Lisa, you may have the floor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Lisa Bachman, JUB Engineers, 2760 West Excursion Lane, Suite 400, Meridian, Idaho, 83642. So just to give a quick overview of the introductions of our team that's worked on this plan, as Morgan indicated, this project started when Lisa Holland kicked it off for the East Urban Renewal District. So myself, I worked on the plan, the eligibility study, walked it through the process. We also had Ren Thurgood, an engineer, prepare the infrastructure plans and cost estimates. And we actually have Josh Elliott with us tonight to answer any engineering questions if those do come up in his place. And Elam and Burke will conclude the presentation. I'm just going to go over a couple slides real quick to get everybody oriented. And then Olivia Metz is on the phone, and she prepared our economic feasibility study, and she can answer any questions that you have related to that. Just a little bit of background on the East District, and this might seem repetitive because we've been before you a few different times. We've had workshops. For Councilman Biggs, this will be the first time you're probably hearing this. So the project is located in the Cunamora coal area. It encompasses approximately 1,500 acres that was annexed into city limits in February and October of 2021. The business interests that were sparked from CUNA's economic development efforts to attract national companies and more commercial development in the city attracted a data technical center, a trust plant, and an agricultural food cleaning business, among others that I'm sure Morgan is aware of. It was identified as industrial use on the future land use map back in 2015. It provides good access for trucking, rail, electric, and telecom utilities, but it's also challenging for water, sewer, and roadways. So the East District has been contemplated since 2020. I know it sounds really weird, and Megan can talk about that a little bit more, and the opportunity to address water, sewer, and roadway deficiencies, this area would not fully develop to support desired industrial development until much later in the future. So the absence of public infrastructure is the reason why we are putting this urban renewal district together to help fund those public infrastructure improvements. So this map shows the urban renewal district boundary. It hasn't changed since we've been before you in the past. Just really quick, I'm going to go over the steps to create a district. Megan's going to talk in more detail in legal terms and go through all the requirements that we've been through, but just to kind of orient everybody on where we're at in the process, we did an eligibility report to determine the area eligible in February of 2022. And then between February and July, we prepared the urban renewal plan, which required looking at all the infrastructure improvements needed out there, the costs, and that type of thing. In August of 2022, we did a work session to review the draft plan and the components, and also sought partner agency coordination. And then in September, it went before the Urban Renewal Agency, and they recommended approval of that, and we continued coordinating the process with decision-making bodies. And then in September, it went before the Planning and Zoning Commission, and their role in this is to evaluate conformance with the with the comprehensive plan, and they deemed that it was in conformance with the comprehensive plan and did forward the goals identified within it. And so tonight we're here, the final step to this developing this urban renewal district plan and adopting it. And it's a formal public hearing, and that's occurring tonight. So I will turn it over to Megan, and she's going to walk you through all the components of the urban renewal plan, talk a little bit about the feasibility study, and then open it up for questions, and then direct action, or at least lead you into the action of the plan tonight. We also have a couple slides, a handful of slides at the end that describe an urban renewal district if anybody does have questions about that for reference. So with that, I will turn it over to Megan unless you have any questions for me before that.
Okay. Questions for Lisa?
No, ma'am.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. My name is Megan Conrad. I'm an attorney at Elam & Burke in Boise, Idaho, 251 East Front Street. I always come with a lot of paper, so excuse me. Just stepping back a minute, wanted to remind everyone what an urban renewal plan is and what it's not. An urban renewal plan is not a specific contract. Rather, it is a guide to implement specific development within a specific geographic area for a specific amount of time. And as a reminder, an urban renewal agency it's not a taxing district. By statute, it receives an allocation of revenue from the increment value of growth that's occurring within that specific geographic area. The Urban Renewal Agency also does not play a role in the assessment or evaluation process. Again, happy as we go through this presentation to Councilmember Biggs, I know you haven't participated in these before, so happy to jump back into some details as we work our way through. So is this the best way to? Okay, here we go. Lisa actually did a really good job of outlining where we've been and the path we've taken to get here today. We always describe an urban renewal process as having two phases. The first is the eligibility phase, which looks at the statutory conditions that determine whether an area qualifies to be included for an urban renewal project. Once that determination is made by City Council, then that kicks off the planning process to establish a proposed urban renewal revenue allocation area and the establishment of an urban renewal plan. This process has provided a lot of opportunities for during public meetings to present the information contained in this plan. As preparation for this public hearing today, at least 30 days in advance, a notice has been published in the paper advising of this public hearing twice, including a map that shows the location of the area, and also the copy of the plan, the agency resolution approving the plan, and a copy of the notice was also sent to the overlapping taxing districts at least 30 days in advance of this hearing today. So when we talk about the establishment of an urban renewal plan, the elements contained therein are specifically set forth in Idaho Code. Idaho Code Section 502905 identifies 8 specific elements that have to be included, and those items do have to be included with specificity. What I'll do is I will just quickly hit on each of these elements, identify where in the plan we can find it, and then to the extent we want to go deeper into the economic feasibility study and the proposed projects, we can do so. These 8 elements in general are embodied in the plan narrative itself as well as the attachments to the plan. The first element has to satisfy the 10% valuation assessment, and that's where you look at the adjusted base value of the existing revenue allocation area, together with the assumed base value of the proposed new area. Those together cannot exceed 10% of the current taxable value of the city. Those numbers have been run and are identified in Section 502.3 as well as Attachment 5. And combined, it's about 2.4% of the city's total taxable value, so well within that 10% threshold. The next requirement is a statement listing the kind, number, and location of all proposed public works improvements within the proposed revenue allocation area. That can be found specifically in Attachment 5, as well as in narrative form describing in a little bit more detail how we can use those dollars to effectuate those projects set forth in Section 301. The most significant aspect of the urban renewal plan is the economic feasibility study that is found in Attachment 5. And essentially what the economic feasibility study does is it looks at the revenue projections for the district for the 20 years. It looks at the associated project costs for the specifically identified projects. And then to the extent the revenues exceed those project costs, then a determination of feasibility is made for the project. The next is a detailed list of estimated project costs that is included in the specific list of the priority projects, which is found in Attachment 5. A fiscal impact statement showing the impact of the revenue allocation area upon the affected taxing districts, that is set forth in a narrative format in Section 502.8 and Attachment 5. And in general, the way we talk about impact is really it's a delayed access for the overlapping taxing districts to access that new construction value that goes on the new construction roll and eventually provides a budget capacity increase over time. So in prior to that time, it's really a net neutral proposition because it's value that wouldn't have been there but for the efforts, you know, of what we're doing in order to satisfy those significant public infrastructure needs in the area. The description of the methods of financing are also a critical component. It's found in Attachment 5, as well as sections, primarily in Sections 300 and Section 500 of the plan. And what's contemplated for this plan is either direct use of revenue allocation proceeds to fund projects by the agency itself, or in partnership with either developer or other public entities where we the agency would engage in reimbursement agreements where infrastructure can be advance funded and then reimbursed over time over the life of the district. There's a termination date for the plan that's required, and that's 20 years under Idaho law. So December 31st, if established, it would be December 31st, 2042, recognizing how we receive revenue allocation funds. Dollars would actually be received by the agency in 2043. And then finally, a disposition of the retention of any assets an agency holds at termination. That is also found in Section 800. And to the extent the agency winds up in ownership of any assets, those generally are disposed of to the city or another public entity that may be more appropriate. There is a phrase that says an agency can retain certain assets post-termination so long as there are other dollars that would be able for maintenance and operations of those properties during that holdover, such as if there was a rent proceed or if you have parking revenue or another source, then that may be available at that time. So Lisa talked about the finding of conformity. There was a meeting before planning and zoning where a resolution was adopted, making the finding that the proposed plan before you is in conformity with the city's comprehensive plan. The goals for this district are industrial, commercial, and those are consistent with your planning documents. The infrastructure improvements that have been discussed and are identified in the plan in the prioritization in Attachment 5 are primarily roads, water, and sewer public infrastructure improvements that are much needed in order to serve and develop this area for the industrial commercial uses. So jumping quickly into the heart of the economic feasibility study, I will touch on it and since Olivia is by phone, but certainly to the extent you have any specific questions about what's contained in Attachment 5 or the data underlying, she is available to answer any of those questions. So there's a number of variables that go into a future revenue projection in a project area. What you have before you on the slide and also in your packet, this is pulled from attachment 5, is the proposed development scenario, which identifies the overall revenue yield over the life of the district to be about $58 million. And it shows a base value, what we're talking about as of January 1, 2022, to be $6.2 million. And with the anticipated growth that could occur in this district over the 20 years, ending with a $918 million assessed valuation that would eventually go back on the regular tax rolls. For purposes of this analysis, the levy rate of 0.00557106 was used to derive the anticipated revenue projections. That is based on the 2021 certified levy rates, recognizing that the 2022 levy rates are only coming online now, and for purposes of revenue projection, you have to start somewhere. These revenues are anticipated to be, could be fairly conservative over the life of the district. And this levy rate only calculates the levies that would potentially generate revenue for the agency. Idaho Code Section 502908 specifically identifies levies that do not generate revenue or provide an allocation to the Urban Renewal Agency over time. Most of the school district levies are accepted from the formula. The only exception is a tort levy, which is extremely de minimis and has no impact on the tort levy or the tort budget for the school district. As well as, you know, generally voter-approved levies and bonds are also accepted out from the allocation formula. So when we talk about the estimated project costs, what we're really talking about is those projects that are identified in the priority A. Certainly, when we establish a project area, it is for the full 20 years. And because of the specificity requirement in Idaho Code and the limitations on the ability to amend an urban renewal plan, we want to make sure that for purposes of development and forecasting, that all of the potential projects that could be done in this district are identified. But the priority projects are those that have been identified for purposes of economic feasibility. Priority B and C are listed for purposes of specificity, and ultimately, if this project area overperforms, then those, you know, there might be an opportunity to pull some projects from priority B or C. Additionally, with the cash flow, once it ultimately comes in, and the budget and levy that an agency does, there may be, and the way that development occurs, there may be an opportunity to swap out and reprioritize some of these projects to really marry up better with how development is occurring within the project area. But certainly the focus is on these priority A projects. So some additional requirements that are necessary as we work through this process. The first is the Idaho Code requires that to the extent there is deemed to be an agricultural operation within the project area, property owner consent must be obtained. So for those parcels that were identified as being an agricultural operation, property owner consents have been obtained, authorizing to by the property owner to permit those parcels to be included within an ultimate project area. Maps and legal descriptions, those were reviewed by the State Tax Commission GIS and found to meet their requirements. It is a pre-check. You know, this hasn't been established yet, but it really helps on the back end with going through that process. We already talked about the 10% analysis. For the HCHD agreement, there has been a change in Idaho law that indicated the highway district that impacts the allocation of those highway district levies. Your existing revenue allocation area, there is an agreement between the agency and ACHD which allocates those levies to the Urban Renewal Agency. Currently working through that process with ACHD now for this particular agreement, this particular project area. And then I mentioned that there are some limitations on the ability to amend a project area. post-2016, a modification by City Council ordinance to an urban renewal plan does trigger a reset of the base to the current assessed values, essentially eliminating the revenue stream. There are certain exceptions identified in Idaho code that are not considered modifications that would trigger a base reset. For example, a de-annexation of area or an annexation of area up to 10% of the acreage, ministerial and technical changes, and also to support an existing commercial or industrial project within a district. So, next steps before you for consideration is the ordinance adopting the urban renewal plan. And if adopted, there's a number of post-adoption steps and procedures that have to be followed in order to complete the process. The deadline to complete this in order to have a base year of January 1, 2022 is by December 31 of this calendar year. So it's a lot of information. Happy to answer any questions. Again, Olivia, Lisa, Morgan, and I are all here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Yes.
Not yet.
I have a couple.
Yes, go ahead.
It stated in here that ACHD, there was an agreement that has not been reached yet between ACHD and this urban renewal district. What's pending?
Thank you, Mayor, Councilmember Laraway. So these agreements concerning the allocation of revenue ultimately is between ACHD and the agency. A draft agreement and the plan has been submitted to ACHD for review. It's just in the queue for review. The deadline to complete that process actually is September 1 of 2023. So there is some time to continue.
And basically, our agreement with ACHD is that monies collected for roadway improvements go to ACHD for roadway improvements. So it really isn't anything that's it made ACHD feel good about the program because we're not using them for other things or keeping their funding from them.
We're letting them off the hook.
Yeah.
I've got a series of questions. You can bounce around for one. I just got some things I want to ask. The valuation of the property before urban renewal is hypothetically what? $10 million? A foreseeable number. I'm trying to find the difference between a property's value pre-urban renewal district versus post. Because that's the taxation difference.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Laraway. The establishment of an urban renewal district does not in and of itself increase the value.
Correct.
So
it does devalue it under the urban renewal, right? Because we're only going to collect some taxes off of it.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Mayor Sarah, Councilmember Laraway. So just hypothetical, if this gets adopted by December 31st of 2022, then the value of for purposes of the base value for the urban renewal district, and I'm just going to say project area, revenue allocation area, urban renewal district, I'll mean the same thing. That is going to be the current assessed value of that property as of January 1, 2022.
Pre-urban renewal.
Well, it's the value of the property for 2022 is as of January 1, 2022. So it's always, you wouldn't have your next valuation for 2023 until, you know, the May values come out and those are effective as of January 1, 2023. Yeah, it's all retroactive.
I'm trying to find the chart that was on here.
Page 11.
This one here?
It's on here. It talks about the taxation difference. I can't find it.
This one?
It's
no.
This guy?
No. There's another one. It's a smaller one.
I can make this smaller.
You can. Can you squeeze it?
This one? This anticipated revenue?
No, that's not it.
Okay.
I'll find it in a minute. Let me bounce on another question. The reason I ask that is there's some reason this isn't fair to the school district. They don't have impact fees. They rely on a tax base. Now, if we're going to reduce the tax base under urban renewal, that little bit doesn't get taxable, and it hurts their bonds.
Yes, yeah, so thank you. So we are not reducing their tax base. Their tax base is as it is for January 1, 2022. There's no reduction in the tax base just by an overlay. And they're, especially in a district, you know, like this, this is a commercial industrial district. It's, and again, 502908 really describes the allocation process in which levies generate revenue for an urban renewal agency, and pretty much all of the school district levies are accepted out of that allocation formula, with the exception of the tort levy. And still, the school district is going to, you know, budget for its tort levy, and it's going to levy to that budget. It will get its tort district. And it's just based on, you know, how taxing districts budget, you know, you levy to that budget. And it's not a reduction in the current assessed value once that overlay is set.
Okay, and now I'm going to arguing point with you.
Okay.
You can educate me. Under your whereas section, you go into the description of the urban renewal district. And it talks about the description. Deterioration. There's no structures out there that need to be torn down because of poor neighborhoods or anything like that. The street layout is already pretty much started. The faculty layout in relation to the size of, you know, there's already a plot. So it's already developed or getting developed. The sanitary part of it's being handled by Meta. The existing condition, which endangers life, doesn't exist out there. So I'm questioning why they're using that as the reason to create an urban renewal district.
Yes, thank you, Mayor, Council Member Laraway. The statutory terms are unfortunate. The statutory, in terms of the definitions that are used under both 502018 and 502903, use deteriorating area and deteriorated area. And I agree, it's not great words, right? But when we dig into what are the elements underneath those deteriorating conditions, there's specific language in there that permits a deteriorating finding, essentially, in an open land area.
Well, what's deteriorating out there? It's all open.
Well, there's a number of, and let's see, let me see if I have my, in the findings, one of the most significant issues is the fact that there is not sewer and water servicing, especially those areas as you go south.
Yes, there is.
Well,
I mean, but the sewage is going online and the well is being dug.
So if I can jump in here.
Okay.
So Meta's building a wastewater treatment plant. They're not building a wastewater treatment plant that is sufficient to take care of all future needs. They're building the base, and it's expandable.
You can buy into it.
Well, no, that you have to build onto it.
Or hookup fees.
Well,
but my point is, I'm trying to differentiate the meaning of we have a problem out there when we don't. I mean, yeah, there's no sewer and water today, but it probably within 8 months it will be.
So you'll have to probably let Morgan chime in on this as economic development.
Is that a request to speak? Thank you, Mayor and Councilman Laraway. Yes, agreeing with Megan in the way that the state statute is written and how they determine it as a deteriorating area is kind of confusing. But when we look to the infrastructure as we have planned and how it calculates back into those very specific statutory definitions of deterioration, when we looked at the feasibility study, what we came up with was, as the mayor spoke to, the water wastewater systems that are being constructed out there by Meta are expandable systems. So any additional user that would come on would be immediately out of the gate responsible for their own lagoon treatment, retention, and land application area, as well as any... depending on where they locate, and it's deceiving when you look on a map out there to acknowledge how much pipe goes in just into the right-of-way. So from pretty much any place right now that's being actively marketed, someone is going to have to put almost a mile of pipe in the right-of-way before they can even get to connect. So that's one of those deteriorating or insufficient infrastructure needs. So there's an incredible just linear span that needs to be covered, as well as those expensive out-of-the-gate upgrades for industrial users that would be required to connect to the system. And I always talk about this. It's interesting coming to CUNA and our first industrial project being the Meta project, and how unusual it is to have a industrial user come with that kind of upfront cash. And that's one of the motivating reasons to get this district established, is so that we have that increment financing and reimbursement model available to make the connection to the system Meta is building a reality for any other user. Most users that come in don't have a big fat checkbook to just pay out of hand for all of that public infrastructure upgrade. And so this allows us a little more flexibility to get those miles of pipe in the ground for them in a way that makes sense from a business perspective.
Here's my understanding of what you're saying. I agree that whatever happens out there, building company ABC is going to have to lay pipe to hook into the sewage or to the water system. Isn't that what we call a developmental agreement with all the developers around here? They have to pay for it.
And that is true, but it's a lot different. The difference between residential development and industrial and commercial business attraction is very different, very different drivers. So we compete for industrial projects. Residential development happens because this is an attractive area. So especially right now in the Valley, where we're one of the hottest markets that is happening right now, we need to be ready and have our property set up and competitive so projects can land here rather than Caldwell or Nampa or Mountain Home or our other regional competitors.
And then the other thing that can happen there is, which we don't want to promote, is for industrial users to come in and set up their own wastewater treatment plant, actually
in the county.
Plant, basically, what am I looking for? Drain fields and that type of thing. We want them to tie into this system, so we need to make it available for them to tie into that system. And, well, let me use one example that's near and dear to everybody on CUNA must know, and that would be the CUNA Theater. The CUNA Theater didn't come to CUNA because they chose to go to Caldwell that had an urban renewal district that paid to set them up so they didn't have to have that initial upfront investment. We couldn't do that for them because we didn't have that system in place. And that's basically what this does, is it allows us to attract businesses that otherwise wouldn't come here. What's that?
When did they go over there?
Oh, I don't remember.
It was a couple years ago.
The Lux Theater project, I think that was 2017, 2018.
So before we even have an urban renewal district.
Correct.
Because our district...
We have one now, downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And see, that's my, I don't want to call it itch, but that's my itch about this. I understand urban renewal districts for like downtown. Mostly the shops are mom and pops. They don't have the tax revenue base to improve on their own. So I understand that. But we're talking to me about taking this out to an industrial area where, I don't mean to disagree with you, but usually those kind of people have deep pockets. And if they want to have an industrial area, and I know not everything's 50 acres and has stacked pipes. I know there's smaller ones. But it just seems like we're creating something too soon, unnecessarily.
Well, if I may add, John, Medicaid here without an urban renewal district, I think is what you're saying. These other groups, do they necessarily need that? Is it a high priority?
I would actually counter your observation on that. Our competitors in Nampa, Caldwell, and Boise are all using urban renewal to do their industrial parks. It's one of the only ways that you can get the magnitude of infrastructure built as fast as most industrial projects coming can make it happen.
And that's the other part of this is if an industrial user comes in when they ask Morgan to look at those things, they happen really quickly. If that they don't want to wait for that infrastructure to be put in place, nor do they want to be the ones to have to initiate that because that takes a lot of time. When they come, they want to be able to set up shop in 6 months. And if that infrastructure is not being put in place or the means to do so already, then we can't even come close to that timeline and they don't come here. Then they go to Nampa. And
right, that's what's killed several projects here is we didn't have shovel-ready sites.
And the only thing that has actually started this is the fact that Meta came and they're building a wastewater treatment plant. So that gives us something to expand from. Otherwise, we'd still be not doing anything out there probably other than what little users come in and could do their own septic systems.
I have a question.
Yeah.
On this, so the infrastructure, we defer the taxes to build the infrastructure. Do the companies that come, do they pay that back to the taxpayer?
So reimbursement agreements come individually before the urban renewal agency, and that's usually something that is discussed on a project-by-project basis and weighted very heavily based on things like the capital investment of the project, the number of jobs they're bringing, and part of that, it all becomes part of the overall incentive package when we're looking at doing any kind of a business attraction deal. So I have seen them structured many different ways, you know, either a straight 100% reimbursement, depending on what the infrastructure piece was, to things like 50% of the tax increment for X number of years, if it was a project that maybe they needed a little bit of help, but the agency didn't think it was something worthy of funding 100%. So those are evaluated individually.
And I think bringing jobs here is a good idea, right? Because you got, I mean, a lot of, I understand what you're saying. If we don't have it, they don't look at us to begin with, right? So we do, but what I have to do is I have to go back and explain this to my constituents that, yes, that we'll negotiate some of that, be paid back, right, as taxpayer funds. And then I'd like to know, what does the school district currently draw out of that, the taxes that are paid to the school district, if any? Will they lose that, the taxes that they're getting until the end of the urban renewal district? Can they still collect the school district? That's what I'm asking. Any taxes they would currently get on that property?
Parks and Rec.
I think you said there was a couple that continue it, right? Police.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bruce. So the way that it works is that the taxing districts, they establish their budgets through their statutory budgets authority. And then, you know, pursuant to the levy process, you know, the levy is set, and then the taxpayer pays their bill. And the taxing districts get what they were budgeted. And it's the allocation for the on the increase in value that flows to the Urban Renewal Agency. So in general, let's just say 10 years go by and there's, you know, we hit a recession and there's delayed development in that area. If there's no increase in value, there's no revenue that's flowing to the Urban Renewal Agency. It's not a dollar per dollar shift from a taxing district to the agency.
It's after it's assessed. Is that what you're saying? There's no increase in value.
There's no dollar per dollar shift from a taxing district to an agency. It's all based on the overlapping district's budget and levy setting process. And the taxpayer pays its tax bill on its full value. And then it's the portion of the applicable levy rate is applied to the increment value only. So it's value that was not there.
Thank you.
I just have a question. So going back to your development scenario, and you're talking about the increment value that goes back into the Urban Renewal District, to me it reads like there's a small sliver that goes to the tax base of the city. So I'm concerned about the resident share in this and what they're going to get because, for example, 2024 in your scenario, the $6 million is what they're taxed on for the city, and then the $170 million increment value goes back into the Urban Renewal District. I mean, I see how that's a great advantage for them. I'm just wondering what's the advantage to the, or what is it for the city other than jobs or, you know, to bring some jobs. You know, Meta's bringing 100 jobs, I think. And potentially other industrial jobs. So I'm just trying to wrap my head around that part.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Biggs. It's a great question, but it's really within the city's purview and the city's budgeting how it decides to increase its budget. And then you levy to that budget, and part of that budget analysis uses the base assessed value as part of the total taxable value of the city. So I think when we're talking about the long-term benefits, it's simply a delay in the ability for that new construction to be placed on the new construction roll to increase your budget capacity for a limited period of time. And then ultimately 80% of that increment value under current law goes on your new construction roll and is available for a budget capacity increase when the revenue allocation area goes out.
In 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And until then, though, the city has to put up with probably increased traffic, you know, possibly water, more sewer, and that sort of thing. So that's just things that are on my mind. Thank you.
Okay.
Jared has a question.
Jared, yes.
Yeah, so Councilmember Biggs, Jared Empey, City Treasurer. So I just wanted to make the comment that all entities that are going out there in that industrial zone have to meet a certain analysis, just like we did for the Meta property. So with that, they're part of that development agreement, which states that we have to assess their impact to determine if they are required to make an additional payment, just like Meta did. So there would be additional incentives that they would have to be analyzed for outside of and irrespective of the Urban Renewal District.
Who makes that determination? The city, or is it
the city? Does, yeah. So in other words, that
how much power does the city wield in that situation?
A lot.
Okay.
Because we basically told Meta how much they had to pay, and they did.
Okay. Well, that's what I'm saying. Tell me numbers. That's that. Because
yes.
I can read the on here, that's what I see. I mean, you're a treasurer, obviously.
Right. So basically what we said was when Meta was wanting to go in due to House Bill 389, it was very difficult for us to fund police services out there, and so we calculated basically how much that service would require, and they front-loaded that payment over 20 years. So there would definitely not be any lack of service out to that area due to new development. And it wouldn't be the residents in the core that would have to suffer on account of it. And then at the end of the or expiration of the urban renewal district, then we would get that windfall from the expiration of the district.
I get it. I'm just saying, when you talk to your constituents and say, look forward to 20 years from now, it's going to be great.
Yeah, but with this particular area, we'd kind of put some provisions around that and in planning for it. So with this particular one, it shouldn't be an issue.
Will Meta's taxes be deferred back into this, the taxes they pay?
Yes. Yes, they agreed to be part of it.
And it also doesn't mean that it's going to expand, it's going to run the full 20 years either. If things go quicker, it pays itself off quicker, it'll be done quicker. That's always the hope. The 20 years is that maximum lump. So
does the city have the ability to, I mean, once it's over, I guess, or we can end this in 2036 if we wanted to?
Sure. Yeah, once projects are done and they've accomplished what they wanted with the urban renewal district, it can.
And I guess my question then would Meta agree to that when they have a pretty good tax?
Well, they're still paying the taxes either way. It doesn't matter to them.
We're just making Meta pay for the infrastructure for more jobs. Now, I mean, you may want to look at what you want out there. I think that'd be an economic development thing. I think, firearm manufacturers are industrial. I'd like to see that. John, you have any other questions?
I just don't know if it's fair. I know that's kind of a simple answer, but any other industry that comes out here, a welding shop or anything that's considered industry, not going to get the same break that this is unless they live in that one neighborhood. So if you have something across the street, across the railroad tracks, and decides they want to build trailers, it's industry.
Morgan, you can answer that.
Commissioner Laraway, yes. Actually, we have a bunch of industrial right along the railroad tracks that is in CUNA West. So if projects start coming forward that would fit into that, we would be able to help them out. It is about being in a revenue allocation area.
How would we help them?
So if there's infrastructure improvements that they need in the public right-of-way, that's identified in that CUNA West plan. So that's some of that there. What's holding up a lot of West District is our baseline sewer capacity issue. So once that's solved, we'll have a little more flexibility to address that kind of stuff over there.
So am I hearing you say,
it has to be used within the project area, but we have that light industrial area is part of the West District. So we have our existing revenue allocation area that has downtown, but there's also some industrial incorporated in that.
In the West.
Correct. We just haven't been in a place because of our baseline issue with sewer to really get into utility projects over there.
It hasn't created the increment on its own yet, whereas this one will.
Yes, if I had enough increment to do Mason Creek tomorrow, we'd be after it.
Yeah, I still worry about the school district. There's something telling me that they're not getting the money they could get if it was taxed normally under other than urban renewal. something I read, I'm trying to remember what it was, but school districts were specifically targeted. I don't want to say targeted, but they were specifically left out. Police impact got their money, highway district got their money, impact got their money. Schools didn't. Unless they had to file a special form with the state.
So are you talking about impact fees?
No. Let me impact fees, because they're not allowed. But it was under the urban renewal district because of the taxation difference. And that's what I'm hung up on. I've got it written down somewhere.
I think that was a different PowerPoint that they did. They did a different PowerPoint that was different a couple months ago, right?
Well, that was the first PowerPoint they did. They said that this urban renewal district would not impact police impact money, fire district impact money, it would not affect, but it schools was not included.
I think what it comes down to for me is do we want to have site ready available for industrial companies to come? Right. I mean, and do we want Meta to pay for it or the taxpayer? I mean, I'd like to see the taxpayer be reimbursed for it, but I think that's down the line. I think that's where we're stuck at. But no, that's, yeah.
Okay. Further question? All right. Okay. All right. So this is a public hearing. Nobody signed up. Is there anybody who wishes to testify who didn't sign up? Okay. So we'll leave the public hearing open until you're done asking questions of anyone else.
No.
Help me understand with the Meta commitment for the sewer and water. Is that going to be turned over to the city? So it is supposed to be turned over to the city? Because I remember their promise of net zero water by the year 2030, which I assume water is going back into the aquifer. I don't know. And then, but does that still, is that still going to be, I don't know if that's really what that has to do with the urban renewal district, but another company comes and hooks onto that. So the city now owns that and will negotiate with these other companies.
So they'll have to pay their water and sewer bill.
Right.
Yeah.
I just wondered if, I guess, from the water
standpoint. It is to the city, yes.
Okay.
Anything more, John?
Okay.
Anything more?
No, I'm done. I'm good.
Okay. Then I would move, if I get on the right page here, to close the evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded. Do we have any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
And that motion carries.
Now we're in deliberation.
I'm confused. You didn't want to close the public hearing? Do you want us to reopen hearing?
No. I thought we were voting on the action.
I don't know what you
battery was out. I changed that to yes.
Okay. Well,
do you have further questions then?
No,
that's where we're at now.
No, sir.
Now we're in deliberation, so we can discuss it. What's your thoughts, Greg?
Well, it opens the door for, you know, an industrial footprint for us, and this is the way that it pays that shovel-ready site to draw businesses in. I mean, on a hope and a prayer, Meta decided out there instead of what other ever options they had, Caldwell, Boise, Mountain Home, whoever. I mean, it's the one, and now we have the ability to add to it. And, you know, in time it'll be a great thing. Yeah, it's maybe not the most rosy thing right off the get-go, but, you know, it's a different caliber. But if you look at, like, some of Caldwell's urban renewal stuff,
It didn't start off real rosy either, and then look what it's evolved to now. So it has the potential, but you just have to give it the time to make itself work.
And then I'll say that urban renewal has been used very successfully in other cities. The one thing that we have been completely short of here in the city of Kuna, we've always been 90% residential tax burden and 10% commercial. And we're never going to dig out of that hole unless we start getting some of these bigger companies out here to doing some things, because, you know, building another Ridley's and another little store here and there, that's not going to help us. There's always going to be enough homes to keep us in that 90-10 hole. Mm-hmm. We've been in that hole forever. The only way to get out of it is to make it possible for companies to come in and have a place to set up shop in the city of Kuna. Mm-hmm. And until we do that, we're going to stay there.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with that, but I mean that. But we're deferring those taxes, right? Back in the, we won't see those till 2040.
Right. For me, it's about what's the intent for the city of Kuna. I mean, we're part of a major metropolitan area, Boise, Meridian, Napa. We can get, you know, there's jobs there too as well. So if we were, you know, a little more geographically isolated, excuse me, then I definitely see, you know, wanting to bring more companies in and to do that. But we are a bedroom community. I get it. But I just don't know. That's part of the allure of Kuna, is it's always been kind of a small, you know, smaller town that you can, that's part of the metro area, but, you know, just far enough but just close enough.
Right, but this gives us the ability to draw, maybe not immediate, but in time, draw from a better tax base, being the industrial side, and looking at where some cities' industrial areas are and surrounded by housing and stuff, look where ours is. It's way out there where no one really cares. I mean, a few neighbors, yes, and whatnot. But for the most part, we have this potential huge taxing base to help draw from, to help with our 90-10 diversion of tax income. And it's way out there where no one cares.
And the taxes that we're deferring, we're not getting now.
Right.
And we're not going to get unless we do something right. Like this. And my hope and the way things have been going around here is that we can get that filled up and we can do a build-out and be done with the urban renewal district quickly.
Okay.
I mean, that's my – everything that we've done so far has happened at least five times quicker than what we've anticipated.
Could you explain get rid of the urban renewal district quickly?
Well, that's what we said. That's what they were saying earlier. That if it's completed, we can end it.
How many years is the maximum? It doesn't have to go 20.
See, that's what I understand. When is a 20-year commitment? And that's what I've been just skittish about.
It's not a 20. Once our projects are done.
When they say they're done, right? What is they are done? If they decide they don't want to do any more expansion or that it doesn't want to put another building in or something like that. When are they consider that done? And the urban renewal district is complete.
Well, that would be up to council when we're done.
Morgan has a question.
I was going to say an answer for that question would be, the agency would decide at that point in time that they were satisfied with the completion of the district.
The build out would be done.
And I'm not saying it's bad, and I understand you guys talk, you know, say that Meta was good, but that's probably about a 50-50 or a 60-40, depending on who you talk to. You know, you have people that are definitely concerned about making that an industrial area, but then you also have people that do want more jobs. And I get it both ways. I think, you know, you just have to look at yourself and what you guys want to do. I can kind of already have my vote, I think.
Well, so what if, here's the big what if Meta or whoever, or, you know, year 10 into the urban renewal district pulls up and leaves, what happens to that tax, the taxes that would have been, I guess, what happens to that?
Or if the economy
company leaves. Well, right. That's what I mean, I guess. And then the chart definitely skews a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a million variances.
The economy crashes, or...
So, let me ask this then. Is council comfortable with wanting to decide this, or do you want more information and come back another day with it?
I'm good.
I'd rather we're all informed and.
I think we should all be okay with it and not just one person. You know, I don't want to have to. I mean, unless you. I'd rather everybody be okay with it.
Well, even if you won't get okay with it, if there's more information that could possibly get you there, then we should have more discussion.
I personally would like to hear from the school district. Because you got a dog in this fight, in my opinion. Do you have anybody that you have expertise with with these?
Well, we're
can we get a motion to reopen the public hearing then?
I'm sorry, I screwed that.
I so move.
Well, you did that on the last one too. Quit it.
I so move.
Is that procedurally? Is that?
No, I need a full motion. I need an actual motion.
I would move we reopen the public hearing in the case of 2022-34.
I second.
Motion's made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Robbie Reno, if you would state your name and address for the record, please.
Robbie Reno, Kuna School District 711 East Porter Street, Kuna, Idaho. So in texting conversation with our superintendent about this, she said that they thought there was provisions that urban renewal can't impact schools. When Lisa was working on this, I had our financial advisor review it at the time, share the info with me at that time. She can't find it. She's emailing our financial advisor, Michael, and that's what we're waiting on is that how does this impact? And Morgan might have more info on that, but we don't know.
Okay.
We don't know how this will impact on the new agreement. Nothing changed from when Lisa started on it. We're just waiting for confirmation. So that's what I have.
Well, I gave you a shot.
I don't know how it affects us. I mean, we can find out and get back to you, but I don't have a clear answer right now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robbie.
I would just follow up and reiterate again with what Megan said. In post-2016 plans, the legislature changed the rules and made it pretty clear as to what levies are and are impacted by urban renewal to protect the school district as much as possible. I came from NAMPA administering their urban renewal district. We were the place that got sued by Valley View School District, and the legislature came up behind and kind of cleaned up that mess and made it so that didn't happen and tried to correct it from a taxing standpoint.
And a lot of NAMPA's problem was that they built a lot of infrastructure as far as libraries and the Idaho Center and things like that.
Correct.
They don't pay taxes quickly. We don't intend to ever use it for that. Ours is simply for...
They don't pay taxes at all, do they? Only if it's a city hall or library. Or...
Yeah. Okay. So we have options. If you are so inclined, we can bring this back for another meeting. You can leave the public hearing open. Or if you prefer, we can close the public hearing and move on. Whatever is the pleasure of the council.
I make a motion that we close public hearing and move to deliberation.
I'd second that.
Okay, motion's made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries.
I get. Do you want more time to review information, or you, Matt?
Good.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know. I think it's valuable to bring more jobs or more industrial jobs, right? I see that, but I can't see the argument about not paying the taxpayer back. How quick it gets done. But the fact that we can end the urban renewal district once the buildings are complete, I mean, that does make me feel better about it as well.
Right, and the fact that it does potentially bring industrial in to help our 90 split, which if we don't do it, we're never going to get that.
And the fact that we're making Meta pay for it,
I mean,
in a roundabout way.
And like Mayor said, you know, we build a Del Taco, but 40 houses are built. The offsets, you know, this is huge,
yeah.
You know, huge caliber here to help that offset. So that's a win-win that way, in my opinion.
What do you think, Matt?
Has that commercial area in East Kuna, I guess you could say, has that come up for urban renewal as well? Or is it being considered?
Well, do we already have an urban renewal district?
Is that part of the West?
In Ridley's, right?
That's the
Ridley's, right. Yeah, the Ridley's.
That's the West District.
That's part of the West District?
That is the West District, so then...
Well, I thought it was downtown Kuna was the...
Well, I don't know. Morgan can tell you.
Okay.
There's a map.
I don't know if you have a map.
There's a map on...
Are we involving... I asked Morgan about Ridley's and not being the West, and you said no.
I don't know that it is.
It doesn't go that far north. It kind of follows along Meridian Road.
I'm gonna make a motion that we table this till the next meeting. That'll give you time to answer questions.
We're gonna keep opening and closing the public hearing if we're gonna keep doing this. So.
I won't be here, so I won't be the problem.
Well, but I'd like your thoughts on this if you want to. I mean, it's not your fault. It was his fault.
I'm just confused because, like I said, I know we have downtown east.
I think I have a motion, west. So we either need a second or need a
second.
Well, when Lisa originally did this, Ridley's was already established, which is why they're not part of the URD. So they were already built. They already went from farm. Chris Ingalls, city clerk, for the record. So the historical knowledge on this is that when the URD came into effect and it was going to include downtown, the entire district couldn't include already built parcels. It needs to have more blight in it so that you can increase that value. When Lisa was doing all the calculations and working through the URD, it had already gone from farmland to new buildings, Ridley's, all of those developments out there, which was why that was not included. It wasn't until you got further down onto State Highway 69, closer to Avalon, is where then it initiates kind of around Meadowview coming south.
So since Meadow's already established, are they not going to be in the urban renewal?
They voluntarily became part of the urban renewal. They were asked. They voluntarily. So they annexed into the city
so that they could be built.
A participant.
Yeah. They don't get the tax increment increase until they're ready to move in. The legislature changed that. It used to be when you started digging dirt, they had to pay property taxes on that. They don't do that now until you're moving in. So they're not built.
I would like to add something specific to that as well. It's important to capture the north side of that parcel because there is a lift station and well site there for infrastructure. So in including that expansion of infrastructure, we need to make sure we capture it all in the geographic area.
Is that like Ardell to Deer Flat?
No, I'm talking about on the Meta side.
Oh, the Meta side, okay.
But So when we go in to put in the infrastructure like we were discussing earlier, then a company will come out and it'll trigger whether it needs an environmental study, right? Like we'll just put in the sewer and water. Is that what all is the infrastructure that we're putting in?
Well, so water and sewer, that's gonna be DEQ, and they're the ones that are gonna. I mean, we can't have any leaks, and we can't cause.
They'll
any
have to
damage.
Sign off on it.
Yeah, that has to be. We don't get to do any of that stuff without their permission.
Does ACHD have to grant us permission too if we're gonna do road improvements?
And it's going to be the same as development anywhere, that anytime somebody comes in and a company wants to come in and build a building, ACHD will have a comment, and they have to do whatever ACHD requires them to do to put in their structure. They'll have to pay their impact fees to do road improvements, and then that tax increment base is what goes into road improvements also, so they keep that.
Oregon, question for you. The roads that are going to start going into the industrial area and branching off the different sites,
I don't know what we ought to do here.
Is that private or is it ACHD?
We need to quit closing the public hearing if we're going to.
I thought we left it open.
No, we closed it again.
Never mind.
I mean, if you need to know information, we need to open the public hearing again.
No, that's okay. I don't want to do that. I'm good.
Well, we do have a motion on the floor, I think, going back to Roger's rules.
Yeah, to table it, but I didn't have a second, so.
I thought you did have a second.
Oh, did you second it? No.
Okay, so we didn't vote on that?
No.
So it doesn't matter. Go ahead. I made a mistake. I am so sorry. Public hearing is still open.
No, the public hearing was closed.
I made a motion to table it, but no one got a second.
But he failed. His motion failed for lack of second.
Yes.
Yes, the public hearing is closed.
I was wrong once. I thought I was wrong, but I was right.
People are getting delirious.
I insist. I was wrong.
Well, I'm good either way. I mean, if you want to explore this some more, if we want to get some more information, we can do that.
Well, that would be up to, I think, these two at this point. What, do you need more info to specifically decide one way or the other?
Probably.
John, what do you think?
Well, to be fair, I'm not going to be here probably for the next three meetings, so I don't want to leave that up to me.
Well, and that's why I was hoping we could get through it here, but if we can't get...
Mayor, if I might, if I can just review some attendance issues, and I know John was, Councilman Blairway was starting to go through that, but he will be out the next three meetings, which will remove him from the rest of November and December, wouldn't bring him back until the beginning of January. However, we will be without Councilmember Bruce in January, or the first meeting in January, because he'll be out of state.
So there will be no meeting the first meeting in January?
No, we will have a meeting in January. We'll be missing Councilmember Bruce. And then the next three meetings before that, we'll be missing Councilmember Larraway. So this is the last meeting until the second meeting in January that all four will be here. And I haven't checked.
What does this mean?
Is that beyond your deadline? Oh, wait, I can't ask her anything.
Because, well, her deadline will be missed because the deadline for this, it has to be by December 31st in order to have the values from January.
Right.
But if it changed, then you have to just be reassessed values.
It would be another year it would wait.
Okay.
Perplexing.
Does council want a full discussion again, or does Councilmember Biggs need a private workshop with the Economic Development Director?
my eyes are bleeding for as much as I've been reading over this over the weekend. So I just...
The reason I ask is that when tabling it, whether it's coming back to a full discussion without the full council, or if that just tells me when it can table to a date certain in order to meet the publication. So if you'd feel like you alone benefit from a workshop, because Councilmember Laraway won't be able to vote on it because he won't be here for the next three, then that would be the arrangements that would tell us when we can go to a date certain. If it's going to be a full discussion again, then that tells us date certain as well. That's the purpose of my question, sir.
I'm fine to continue.
You want to continue with the vote this sure. evening?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, then. Here we go.
Oh,
ready to vote.
I'd arm wrestle you, but my arm hurts.
Yes, well. Wave three. Okay. Okay, I would move that we approve Ordinance 2022-34.
I'll second it.
Motion is made and seconded to approve Ordinance 2022-34. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Is there any opposed?
Nay.
No.
Mayor votes yes.
Mayor, could I do a roll call, please?
Yes, go ahead and do a roll call.
Councilmember Bruce?
Aye.
Councilmember Biggs?
Nay.
Councilmember Laraway?
Nay.
Council President McPherson?
Aye.
There's a standing tie. Mayor Steer?
Aye.
Thank
Hallelujah.
You.
Now I would move. Oh, got to say motion carries, huh? I would move we waive three readings of Ordinance 2022-34.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded.
For what? To waive three readings of the ordinance.
To waive three readings of Ordinance 2022-2034. All those,
you can say it.
Yes. Okay.
Waive the three readings.
It's not on That's there, correct. But Chris asked me to.
Oh.
To waive them, so I waived them.
Okay. Motion's made and seconded. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries. And we already approved it. That moves us to Resolution 86-2022. This is to amend the names of the committee members for the CULA Rodeo Advisory Committee.
Mayor, Chris Ingalls, City Clerk, for the record. The request is to... approve this with the new members. It meets the existing resolution, which allows for six members, but also to remove Chris Howard as a candidate, as he is asked to withdraw his name. I stand for any questions.
Questions? So I was at the meeting with the rodeo committee when the nominations were made, and everybody was unanimously in favor of those people. So I would also recommend appointing those folks.
Okay. Let me get back to you.
Just motion to approve resolution R86-2022.
Yeah. Without
without Roman. Chris.
Yeah.
Okay, I would move we approve resolution R86-2022 with the exclusion of Chris Howard.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries. Now, executive session.
I feel like I'm at night court.
So who do we need to be there? Mark, Paul, and council.
Oh, no, we need everybody, all of you guys.